right, great. I have Brooks back on. Talk to Will, however I say it. I don't know how. I'm fucking retarded, but it's always great just to see your stuff, you know. It's just an interesting thing with comedy. You can see people doing stuff, a lot of stuff online. And then you also have to realize those people have lives that are probably pretty hectic too. And it's like, oh yeah, it's probably not as easy as it looks.
Yeah, it's a lot to juggle. And remember, I think it's always important to remember that people you see online are actually people too.
Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting to see what you do. You incorporate your grandfather a lot, right?
Yeah, so I should explain what I do. So I live in New York City, and, you know, as a comic, you try and get as much stage time as possible. And I run a show at St. Mark's Comedy Club called Respect Your Elders. It's an age-themed show. I love one or two older comics, a bunch of young ones. It's a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
But to market and advertise it, what you alluded to is I take a picture of myself and then take another picture of actually myself, put a face app filter over it.
Oh.
So it looks like I'm old, stitch the two together and make some sort of funny or humorous like promotion image.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's not actually my grandpa.
Oh.
People get confused by it, how similar he looks to me.
Yeah.
Because it is just me with a filter.
Oh, that's funny. That's interesting. I was like, oh, that's... With how frequent I was like, oh, wow, that's a really smart
fun. It's a fun thing to do. It's helped me learn a lot. It's been part of my skill set now. It's Photoshop and Premiere and all that.
Right.
This is like, it started as a good exercise, and now it's just a fun way to advertise the show.
Right. Wow. That's great that you have that. I just had her recently on the podcast. Have you ever had Helene Witt on any of your shows?
No, I have not.
You should definitely look into her. She is a very interesting person. She wrote for Joan Rivers a bit. And she's just great. So I just know she's always looking for stuff, and she's like based in New York. So, but she's like an elderly like comic too. So like she's great. But anyway, it's so cool just to see the stuff you're doing. So how much are you really getting up? Like how many times a week, usually?
Yeah, it's a great question, especially here in New York. It can vary. I'm not. Let's say this. I'm past, quote unquote, at St. Mark's, meaning I perform on their house shows.
Cool.
But they're very independent focused club. Mm-hmm. And Danny and Alex, the Carbagno brothers, along with Macy and everyone else who helps them out, they're doing a great job with it and slowly really building a good audience and presence in the East Village. But that said, I don't get up every single week there. I'd say I try and get on their house shows a couple times a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then I run my own shows there. And then on top of that, it's whatever else I can kind of scrounge around. So that's with people inviting me to shows, me reaching out to a few people, traveling. If I were to come down to a number, it's been increasing, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
We'll call it, I mean, last week was fairly busy. I had like 7 spots.
Oh, wow.
So, that's what I would call a busy week at this point. Like a light week is like 1 to 2 shows and then throwing in whatever open mics I can into that.
Mm-hmm.
Which definitely contrasts, comparing a year ago, I was definitely not at those numbers.
Right.
And I mean, a year before that, I don't even think I've been doing any shows. I was just doing the open mics in New York City.
Right.
And then the year before that was back when COVID was a huge thing and I was literally doing one mic at the Brighton Bar, if you remember that.
But, yes, yeah. You came in as one of, like, the last, like, people of that era, which was really the cool thing. It was so sad during Christmas time that they they knocked it down, and yeah, it was just wild.
Yeah. People always ask me, and I'm sure you might, see people ask other comedians, but they always ask me where I started.
Right.
And it's such a weird thing for me because, right before COVID, I took this class in New York City. And it's like, mm-hmm. okay, that's when I first did comedy.
Right.
Outside of, a talent show in college.
Which right.
That's something I had to do, but then I look back at the Brain Bar, I'm like, oh, it really was the first mic I ever attended.
Right.
And I always get this in betweenness. I usually just tell people in New York because it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay, you started in New York, and that has a lot of, I don't like the word baggage, but it implies but I actually did a lot of work here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
New York City, but
it's a lot more. I mean,
think that the Jersey Shore scene is strong and something I hold to a high accord in my mind. It's a great place to start doing comedy, and also a growing scene with a bunch of shows and really good comics in there who are really trying hard.
Yeah, it's a hard thing because Jersey is such an interesting thing with comedy, especially the Jersey Shore area where I started. Because when I started doing comedy, I had to start in improv in 2009 when I was 16. And there was no stand-up in my area. And none of the clubs did open mics or anything. And they just, it wasn't until Angelo started stuff in 2014 and I was able to start in 2015. So it's from that time period of 2009 to 2014, I'm I had to do improv. And, it's just, it was fun, but it was not what I was looking for. And then when I finally got to do it, it's a hard thing because we're very much out of, it's cool to hear you got passed at a club. I always love hearing that from people because it is extraordinarily hard, especially in this state of New Jersey. It's easier in New York, I think. Not easier because there is a vetting process and everything, but there is actually possibility to get passed at a club in New York. And from the one thing I'm jealous from is other comedians that I've talked to on this podcast through other states, they have much nicer clubs that put people in and trust people. With New Jersey, especially the Jersey Shore area, the main clubs, the main one, really, it has a specific taste of what they like. So it's tough because they kind of they have this roster of headliners that are mostly New Jersey, Philly, type of, I forget what that's called, but that type of vibe, boomer age guys who just make fun of the crowd and just start very raucous in their stuff. And it's just a very much a pick on the audience type of, crowd type of comics.
Yeah.
And then for, yeah,
throughout the year, to build a business around that is difficult.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're more in tune with how it is at this moment in time.
Yeah, it's just always been tough to sort of break people into that fold of, oh, you're actually performing at a club. It can be so embarrassing to talk about doing comedy to people who don't really know comedy, who only really see stuff on the main stuff of Netflix. It's oh, where are you performing? It's I don't get booked at clubs. They don't want me. And part of me has I have things I like about comedy clubs and things I definitely don't. And it's so funny how I can be so critical of things I don't like at comedy clubs and how they're run and everything. But I would sell my soul to totally just perform.
One thing I'll say is, you alluded to how New York, it's kind of easier, so to speak, right? Because in New York City, there are tons of clubs.
Right.
So the density is something to just simply admire. I kind of got into St. Mark's because I produced shows, and they sold well, and they sold a lot of drinks, and, there's a very, direct relationship where I generated revenue for the club. So they're right. more likely to be like, oh, you produce and you do well on stage and you make this money, like, why not, you know? And it's
right.
it's not even a huge commitment from their end. Oh, I sometimes just stop by for spots. Okay, they don't have to fill out tax form. They don't gotta, like, manage me. They don't gotta do anything.
Right.
So every club is different. There are some clubs like The Stand where it's like, you produce for them and then you have to have this presence online and then you have to be managed and then it goes like, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
That's a hard thing to get into.
Yeah. I only know one person who's like, or maybe like one person and then like the Comedy Fight Club guys. I don't know if you've done any of their roast battle stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I'm doing their 8-year anniversary tomorrow.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. I love their stuff. It's so cool. It's always.
Yeah, Matt's a great guy. They put on some good shows. The Stand are fantastic. I'm a really big fan of them.
Yeah. And, the only other person who I know is. Passed at The Stand. It is Rob Stant. I don't know if you know him, but
I think I ran into him once, but I'm not sure I really know.
Yeah, it's always so weird to remember people. And, like, you know, doing it a long time, it's, like, so weird. You'll see people that, like, took a break, and then they come back, and then it's, like, you know. And even when you start doing stand-up, the analogy that I heard, like, from how everyone feels, which is a great analogy that I've heard, is it kind of feels like coming into a TV show as a character at like the fourth season. Like, everyone is like established as their character and as their arc, and you're just this new person.
That's actually, I've never heard that before, but that is right on the money, because when you start, you'll see, like, you'll go to your first mics and you'll realize, like, oh, these people know each other.
Right.
I had no idea who anyone is. And you see them and they're like, oh, they have this, like, they know what they're meaning to say. They know what they're saying on stage. I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
And even just to get past that point is, you know, for a lot of people, it's difficult to
comfortable
in a social situation around people.
I mean,
and understand, like, yeah. Oh, people are working on things and they keep going here every day or every week or whatever it is. That's one of the most difficult parts of the starting out.
No, it definitely is. I always love talking about starting out. That's mostly what I talk about in the podcast, because I used to talk about it a lot with how tough it is socially. Like, it can be pretty tough, you know, especially from if you're a younger person. Like, when I started, I was younger than everyone else. Which was different for me because I was, like, older than everyone else growing up. So it was, like, when I started doing stand-up at 22 and, you know, everyone's 25 and 27, it's like, oh, wow, such a stark contrast. And now that I'm 29, I'm kind of in that position where there's, like, younger comics than me that are starting out. And I remember being in their shoes where it's like, oh, yeah, this is a totally weird social situation where, like, you're kind of with these people that feel like grown-ups, but they're not. They're just around your same age.
Yeah, you know that they're older, but honestly, sometimes I feel like they act younger. I have a very mature, like, old soul kind of
right.
mind.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
So when it comes down to it, I'm like, oh, I guess I'm like an old man in some ways, but then I tell people, like, oh, I'm 25, and they look at me like, either shock or disgust.
Right. Yeah.
Some variation
of it. But it was cool to see you start out, like, where you started from, and I feel like you always had, like, the thing that I envied about you, like, really admired, was that you immediately knew how to do stand-up, like, in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, you immediately knew the pattern, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, to me, it took me, like, 2 years to learn how to write, like, a setup punchline joke. Like, you kind of immediately seem to have had that, like, figured out better than I did. Of, like, you know, of course you, like, have your shows when you're starting out, but it just seemed like you had the formula down a little bit. Especially, like, you just had stuff to talk about. That was good.
Yeah. I thank you for the praise. I mean, I do feel like I echo that. You know, I agree with that because I've always kind of written stuff, and I always felt like I understood what a joke was. But mm-hmm. My difficulties tend to be the on stage presence or performance parts of stand-up.
Oh, yeah.
And stand-up, as you're well familiar, is everything.
Yeah.
It's everything related to writing, practicing facial expression.
Yeah.
Improv, acting, etc.
Because the whole thing that's tough about it is, once you've been doing it and you like it and you like doing it, you know that you can do it. The audience doesn't know that you can do it and that you know you can do it. So there's like a weird, they can sniff it out like sharks sniff out blood of if you're uncomfortable on stage. And
yeah, that's a huge, that's my focus area right now, is getting to the point where no matter what, where, when, I will come on stage and feel not only confident,
right,
but the audience feels that I'm confident.
Yeah, because if they see that you're confident and you're at least competent, people just want to see the effort. Like, a lot of it is just faking until you make it, and just you don't have to have it all figured out. You just have to make them think for a while that you have it figured out.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
It's like you just need everyone to believe something.
Right.
Whether it be that you have to figure it out, or that this thing actually happened to you, or whatever it is. You just need to think they can take that premise.
And just be like, that's what I can do. Like, a lot of my stuff now, when I get on stage, I talk about my social anxiety and stuff, and how that sort of contrasts to me performing for a long time. So I have a really terrible stage presence that I've always really hated about myself and always get criticized for by random people when I post stuff online of no, I've been performing for so long, I just have this weird social disability that is not great. But it's it's cool with stand-up to be oh, I can do this. Just showing people, if you give me, 15 seconds, I can tell you, I can show you that I can do this. Because it used to be one of the things that, I don't know if this, this probably resonates with you, is, when you're starting out, it takes you so long, it feels like it takes you so long to get to that first laugh. You're, doing your jokes for, a minute. And then they start laughing, and then you're like, I want them to laugh at 30 seconds in what I'm putting down and what I'm saying.
I think a big progress point for a lot of comedians is when they challenge themselves to that first one where they break out of just the setup punchline and they try and go all right, how can I get my first laugh the quickest?
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people who undertake that challenge will realize, and something I've most recently realized is, it's great, obviously you need to know what a joke is, but sometimes you gotta find the funny, and that doesn't mean just set up punchline.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean,
the opener can be your opportunity to learn that, where you can just say something that is funny, or do something that is funny, and then, I think at this point, I can get a first laugh if I do one of these openers in, 7 words.
Right.
Which is, 5 seconds.
Right.
There's comics who do it much quicker, who do it slightly longer, but with bigger laughs. There's so much variety.
Right.
When you challenge yourself to quote-unquote, write in that, with that goal in mind.
Right.
You realize I could do this instead.
Right. Because one of the things that I've learned, from hearing other comedians that are, higher-level professional comedians, and one thing that I've learned recently is, you have to do your sense of humor. You have to do the jokes that you like and your sense of humor. And it can be tough because your sense of humor, each of us, is so unique and personal in a way that it's, it can be kind of weird. You're like, that this may or may not relate to people. And most of the time it does, surprisingly. That's the one thing I always tell people who have stage fright or anything. I'm like, if you're a shy person in life, in real life, your audience is going to be people who are much more shyer than you. They're going to relate to your material. And I feel there's archetypes of personalities where people will just find sympathy with you and relate to you. Like, mm-hmm. And I feel like you do that a lot, right, with all your jokes about sort of your heritage and, like, the Jewish jokes and everything and all that. Like, it seems like you just had that. Like, I always felt bad for you at the Brighton Bar and be like, this guy should be doing bar mitzvahs. Yeah, that's just what, like, when you were starting out, it's like, this is what he needs, that's what he should be doing, because, you know, I would feel so bad, you know, when you're performing in front of other comics, and it's, like, dreadful, and it's, like, no one's reacting, they're all paying attention to their phone, and it's like, no, he's trying.
Right, it's good that you mentioned that, because one of the big things I noticed too is like I find jokes about my stories and heritage very funny, but I want to, you know, branch out, try more things. If I have a Jewish audience into me on a silver platter, though, that's gonna be one of the best times anyone's gonna ever have.
Right.
I know everything. I know every reference. I know everything to make fun of. They know everything to make fun of. And I could just use the tools that I have. I could do a lot more even improv and stuff like that, because I've had these conversations millions of times.
Right.
That said, not every time I walk into the club, I mean, literally last night, not every time I walk into the club, there's going to be anyone Jewish in the audience. They might not be there for you. They might not even want to see you or hear that, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you're going to have to learn, like, hey, they just didn't like your, they don't really relate to your jokes at all, so they're not going to like it that much. And my goal is to kind of be like, all right, that happens. What other jokes can I do? Can I do these jokes? Can I do this abortion joke? Can I do this sex joke? Can
right.
I do this other joke? And the ideal situation is to get into clubs and learn all those places and situations.
Right.
So that no matter where you go, where you travel, who you perform for, who pays you, you can make sure that the crowd has a great time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what you want. Like, if they're a crowd that's, like, interested and they're there, it's like, you know, that's been... It's really cool to perform in front of them. Like, that's the weird thing about, like, to me, not having stage fright anymore. Like, I used to before I performed at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember that. Like, I have to remember that. Like, tell myself to remember that, because I can kind of forget and not be, like, sympathetic enough to people who still have it and be like, oh, yeah, it can be crippling if you aren't used to it. Because you want everyone to like you. And then you perform in front of so many different crowds and so many terrible, like, just crowds at, like, bar shows and stuff and mics, and you're just like, oh, I don't need everyone's approval. like, this 9-year-old Trump supporter is fine that I don't make them. Like, and that's not everyone. Like, you don't want to blame the crowd all the time. That's not a good thing to do. But there are those moments.
It's always good. I like to take like a three order when I critique my own sets and look back. Usually the first thing is like, okay, did I do anything wrong or obviously wrong? Did I fumble a word? Did I say it in correct order? Like, if I do something like that, okay, you could probably attribute to the direct performance. Then the second order I take is usually, does the audience, or not, like, did my performance itself, like, not just gonna make the wrong face, but it seems something like secondary, still on me and focusing on that, but less so about the joke, more or less like the environment I created. Did I create an awkward energy? Did I create a tight energy? Did I create too many laughs or whatever? Like, just people weren't paying attention, etc.
Right.
And then I think the third and final order should be like, okay, but what was the audience like? What was the environment that you were getting put into? Did the guy before you bomb? Did he kill?
Right, that's a big thing too.
Comedy club, like, that's really where you should try. Like, for after you look inwardly, you should start to look outwardly.
Right, that's a big thing too. Is like performing in front of other people. That was always the thing to me that I always hated and had to like remind myself to do more, was to put myself after people who did well, and be like, you got to carry this momentum. So I would usually try that, like, if there was someone that, like, at a mic that I really respected and liked, and I just knew they were gonna, like, if they went first, they were gonna just kill it and just be like, okay, I can, like, carry this momentum, probably. or not.
You're reminding me. So one of my my good comic friends. His name's Eric Walsh. I'm not sure if you're
familiar. Yeah, yeah. Sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's great. I started mic'ing with him in New York City. He's fine. I think staying in New York is, like, in one of his clubs. But he does a lot of shows as well. We always see each other in pal around. But one time we did some competition show, and he went up, and then I went up, and I killed, and I won the competition. He came in second. And I'm like, fucking competition shows are crazy and they're wild, but like, and then like, I come off stage, he's like, oh wow, you towered me. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah, and now I'm coining the term, if you bury someone in a competition show, you get towered. Alright, and then, I mean, this guy could kill any room he wants to, and then I come off the stage yesterday at a competition show that he wasn't doing, but, like, he did a spot on it, and I'm like, but you might have towered me on that one. Oh. It's just so funny to see comics going back and forth, both, I think, challenging each other and doing it in the name of the art form.
That, like, oh, yeah.
Hold each other to good account and make sure that we kind of rise together.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's one of the most fun, you know, and interesting things about comedy is those conversations, like, before and after shows and mics, and whenever you're seeing other comedians, it's just that camaraderie is such a special thing. That's the one thing I wish with, like, the Brighton Bar that I wish happened is there. We had a little bit of it, but I wish there was more, like, stuff that was recorded more, and stuff that was, like stuff, not just, you know, stuff on stage, just, like, socially, like, us bullshitting together, because it's just, like, that camaraderie was just infectious with everyone, and how everyone got, like, just comfortable with performing in front of everyone. And
so what have you been up to recently,
so
Richard? I'm curious,
weird stuff.
Like, what your participation.
So, I've been, I moved in, I don't know if you've met him before, he does some shows in New York, is VJ Preziosi. I moved in with him
for, yeah, I know him.
I'm moving out, back to my parents next month, but I lived with him for 2 years now, and, it's great, you know, it's awesome, I get along pretty, super well, and, he's such a great comic, like, he's amazing, and, the cool thing with that is I've been able to be friends with so many different groups of comedians that everyone that I've sort of become, like, close with in comedy, like, the cool thing is when you're hanging out with them, their stuff just, like, goes off, like, comes off onto you. Like, you can learn their style. Like, the first guy that I sort of, because I don't drive, the first guy that I sort of traveled with was John Beecroft, and he does a lot of Mitch Hedberg, like, style one-liners. And then one guy, Eric Hollerbach, who was in New Jersey a little bit, now he's in Texas. I got to visit him in Texas for 3 days, like, 2 years ago. And that was cool, because he's like a dirty comic, like, very blue and dirty, and, like, you know, it's just what he does. So I learned how to do that a bit. And then with VJ, he is so dark, but, like, not hacky. Like, it's smart stuff. It's smart shit. So it's, like, that sort of side of it. And then, like, Dan just Caprio just recently moved to California. But, like, for many years, he was my mentor in a way. And we were sort of, like, we were sort of had this weird relationship where we were very, very close. And people at first thought that we didn't like each other because we made fun of each other. And we'll bust each other's balls in public all the time, and, you know, and then it'd be like, no, I talk to the guy every week, and it's like, you know, private, and, like, you know, we have our, you know, differences, and we have such an interesting relationship. I think me and Liam are the only ones who are, like, super close with him in that way, and also VJ, I'm, like, just very, very close with him personally, so he was a great mentor to me. So recently, I've been with the podcast, just, you know, been able to have bigger names on. That's been really cool. I've had I had Gianmarco Cerezzi on last year.
Oh, wow.
And that was cool. Like, that was awesome. I just saw him. He was doing a movie with Billy Crystal at the time. And then he, and then the week after my podcast episode came out with him, he, his Comedy Central half hour dropped, and he performed on James Corden. So it was like a cool thing of like, I got this guy that's on all this stuff on my podcast, on my shitty little podcast. It's like, it was so cool. And he has been, he's been super cool to me, like, the times that I've interacted with him a little bit, like, online since talking to him and seeing him, and just, like, he's been super cool to me. So that's been really cool. And just, like, but he was the one, like, major person that, like, I got on the podcast and was like, yeah, this is great. Of, like, and it was so cool.
I mean, I met him a couple times. I don't think he really knows me, but I always admire his work and his work ethic as well.
Yeah.
He's definitely someone I look up to. And I know, like, you know, in whatever the future holds, him and a couple others, I look at mine as like, ah, that's someone who I genuinely would love to, you know, approach their level. Like, it's right. Something I look forward to.
Yeah. It's really cool to see those people and just, like, just be around them and be like, okay, this is cool to see that, like, that side of it where it's like, oh, yeah, these people are working on a totally different level.
Honestly, I don't so also, like, what, so you're getting up, like, I'm trying to remember what.
I'm getting up, like, the cool thing now that we kind of have in our area in the Jersey Shore is we have this poetry scene that joined us, and they've been doing poetry as a scene for 10 years, and they actually, at our open mic that we do together, which is, like, combined, like, mics that are, like, we have shows before that are, like, you know, comedians, like, there'll be, like, three comedians and three poets will, like, perform before the mic and, as, like, a showcase, and, when they were filmed, they got a PBS to film them a documentary of them, of the Poetry Guys, poetry group, and they're actually now doing a series with PBS on it, and it was cool just, like, to see them, because, and we get along, like, super great with them, because a lot of them are funny, and a lot of it is similar approaches to performing, you know, we're all kind of writers, we're all kind of both performers in a way, so, and they're more attentive, like, and likely to stick around and watch than other comedians are, too. So that helped a lot. It was like, oh, you guys actually have a community that is, like, just, we have supportive people in our community, but it's like, comedians will just pay attention to themselves a whole lot. And with that, it just, it helped. So, to me, I'm always just, like, to me, I'm just trying to go to new places, and that's tough with just, like, financially and just life-wise and being like, oh, I want to do these new mics that I've never been to, but it's like, I have to go there, and then all, like, the social stuff, and yeah, it's like, okay, so it's that, and, you know, it's always a funny thing, like, I can kill it, like, the first mic that I go to that's new. Like, I can just do my first opening, like, stuff that I have, and then the next week is tough, because I have to do new shit in front of audiences that are coming back. Like, since COVID ended, like, is kind of in this state where it's not really as rampant anymore, there's a lot more audience members coming back, so that's a thing to contend with, is like, oh, shit, now there's audiences at this open mic that come regularly, they're gonna see me do my stuff. I can't do the same stuff each week anymore. And then the other thing, since 2020, I've been writing a comedy special, like an hour that I want to do in about like a year and a half or two. And I have a place like picked out that I want to do it. And it's, but I've been working on it and I have like 20 minutes done, which is not enough. I need like 20 minutes more of stuff to do. But the thing I'm calling it, the name I have for it is What the Dweck Is Wrong With Me? So it's just an amalgamation of all my jokes that I've formulated over course of 8 years of doing stand-up of just, you know, everything. And then being like, how can I condense this? And the tough thing is, like putting together a set on its own is challenging in a way. Like, it gets easier as you do it, I feel. Like, you can kind of, like, I don't know if this is the correct analogy at all. It's like, you see the forest from the trees, you, like, get a little bit brighter. You're like, okay, I understand, like, where I can put places. Because it's easier to put jokes. So the tough thing is finding a narrative. Because, like, I don't want it to be, like, a one-man show type thing. I want it to be, like, a stand-up special. So it's, like, I got to put it in some type of narrative, but without being too, like, much of a narrative, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I have some friends, like, I have my friend Anand. She's doing, like, a one-woman show. Mm-hmm. And those are always so interesting because, like, don't get me wrong, I love stand-up.
Yeah.
In its purest form, but there's so much room to play with it.
Oh, yeah.
You want to hear people's stories. You kind of want to get into, you know, experiences. And I'm thankful that there's a lot of places and people that want to explore these kinds of things.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That said, giving people the opportunity to do hours, It used to be doing your hour was, like, the thing you always worked towards.
Yeah.
And in a sense, I feel like that distilled it, where it's, like, this is your goal. This is everyone's goal.
Yeah.
But now with a variety of things one can do, people's hours have started to more mix and match. And
right.
And so seem like it's something to check a box, and now are more actual artistic or really focused on the person and their performance.
Right.
I mean, I feel like I've watched a bunch of hours more recently. Not on the big streamers, but, like...
Yeah.
Just below it. I mean, fantastic. And I felt like a better person walking away from them. And I felt
right.
Really entertained.
Because it's cool to see that self-make. Because with stand-up, especially nowadays, like, with how tough it is to get in the clips for everyone, usually, is it's you have to have that. You're like, if I have, you know, a bit of... you know, traction, like, that's what, like, drives it, is, like, okay, that's a little bit of, like, okay, people like this, I can do this, and it's cool, but, it's a crazy thing with stand-up to be, like, to take that leap on yourself, and be, like, no, I can do this, this is, like, because you don't want to ever, like, get too cocky or anything, and just be like, you gotta kind of keep this state of, like, I don't know, like, calmness in a way. Like, not being too cocky, not being too insecure. It's like, I always deal with that sort of paradigm, I guess.
I wouldn't say you have to be humble, but you definitely do have to, control your ego, I think.
Oh, yeah. Because I think the big part of, like, when you do stand-up, like, especially to me, it's, like, it became such a big part of my personality and self-worth that I had to realize, like, that's not really a healthy thing. Like, you can't really wake up as, like, a video game character and be, like, comic. Like, press the button, you want comic. There's gotta be other shit to be a dimensional person.
Yeah. That's changed, you know, with the Shore scene in the past, like, 2 years. Like, what do you think the next couple of years is going to be like?
I think the cool thing, the really cool thing is going to be more of a variety of different performers being able to come in, which is great. You know, it's sort of a hard thing because, like, I feel some people probably might not like that because... we sort of form this as, like, oh, this is the comedy thing. This has been comedy. And, you know, we've always had music and poetry in between and, you know, in and out. But it's, like, I feel like it's becoming more of a centered thing of, like, just creatives. It's just creatives. And also it depends where you are also. Like, there's some places that are just, like, very gentrified now to be, like, that's what they are. It's, like, Asbury Park has that. It's, like, if you're just, like... around artists, that's what it is. It's just, like, being around artists and creative people and being able to form your own stuff also, like, the thing that everyone's been able to do, like, we're doing Ugly Pancake, which is Angelo Gingerelli and Joe Borsata's, their shows that they do, their comedy shows. They're doing a comedy festival at the end of the month, and it's, like, a three-day thing, and, like, they have three different shows and three different lineups. I'm on one of them, and it's, like, it's just cool getting everyone involved, and I think that's what happens now. Is, like, you don't have to try to, like, do big shows and get on all these, like, professional sort of, you know, actual shows. You can be on kind of this, like, I'm a wrestling fan, so it's kind of like the people who are on the independent circuit before they get to the mainstream of, like, WWE. They're, like, people who are starting out. It's, like, they'll wrestle in, you know, in front of, you know, 15 people in a high school, you know, gymnasium, and then, you know, in a couple of years, they'll be on TV, and it's, like, the same thing with us. It's, like, we're just sort of in the background as these other comedians are sort of ahead of us, and it's cool, and I love also coming up in this era where, like, I just started, like, sort of at the beginning with a lot of people, so, like, the comedy scene that I knew of started with Angelo at 2014, I came in at 2015, and it's just been rocking and rolling from there. And to know people, the cool thing is knowing, it's like living, like, sort of in a TV show, like, sitcom of, like, I get to see these characters and these people grow up, and, like, not just as comics, which is really cool, like, it's always cool to see people evolve, but also to see people, like, grow up as humans, too, and, like, as regular people, like, I knew this person when they were 25, and now they're 35, and I know them, like, and I've seen that journey of their life, and that's what I think is really cool. I think in bigger places like New York and California, of course, and even Philly, it's, like, it's less personal. It's, like, competitive and tough. It's, like, you know, people just are very, like, trying to get to their own places and pull people that are friends up. With New Jersey, the thing that we're kind of stuck at is, in a good way and bad way, is we're all in it together. We're all in it in one place. And the cool thing with New Jersey is there's not just the Jersey Shore. There's so many different areas, like, you know, South Jersey and all that. So, like, that's a nice hub, too, because I love how you'll meet someone, you'll go to a new open mic, and you'll meet someone, and then you'll be like, oh, I don't know this person. And then you become friends with them on Facebook, and you're like, oh, we have 50 mutual friends. I didn't even realize that. Just, like, that is what it is. It's so connected. And,
right. And they're like, oh, but they primarily live, like, by Atlantic City, or that's the
right
place that they traveled up. You know, there's that cross-scene interaction is great to see.
Yeah. So what is that true, what I've kind of said about New York? Like, do you feel it's competitive, or do you feel there is a personal, like, kind of a camaraderie to it a bit?
Yeah. That's a great question. So I will say, I tell a lot of people this, but New York City's comedy scene is, frankly, five scenes in one that are connected with the transit, right?
Right.
You have Upper Manhattan and Harlem, that's one scene. You have and the Bronx, that's one big scene. You have Lower Manhattan, a lot of, like, that's where the top clubs are, but there's also these other clubs, and there's a lot of comics there. Probably the densest comedy scene. And you have Brooklyn, very, like, alt, very, like, progressive.
Yes, I know that from BJ.
Right? then you have Queens, that's like the working man's comedy, you know, the middle class, everyone's there, everyone's just, I got home from work, and this is what I'm saying. And then you probably have, like, the Staten Island, Long Island is, like, the fifth kind of combined scene. But, like, between those alone, each one of those places forms its own scene. And I tend to flow between a lot of them, and I don't have a place within them. So, like, there are people who, as you say, I have a personal connection. A lot of that happens if you kind of stay within your scene. So people are very much friends. People very much do have, you know, lifelong connections. They form good friendships through comedy. And that's great. I love seeing friends, and sometimes you see it influenced by, oh, they produce a show together and they travel together sometimes.
Right.
It's like, no, they're just the best of pals and they have a great time together and you can feel the friendship, right?
Yeah.
But then for a lot of people, it's like, me personally, I have been great friends. I really care about people, but I don't manifest that in producing comedy with them. Mm-hmm. And that friendship is usually expressed just through being together, having a good time.
Right.
And then my main focus, my comedy is very much my thing. I don't want to really affect or share it or, like, I think it's a bad word, but, like...
No, that makes sense.
Like, I want to form it without me being the focus point. Okay, do I want to do these shows? Do I want to do this show? Do I want to do this?
Right.
Certainly, feedback is always appreciated. I definitely ask people a lot of fucking questions, but...
Right.
The point being... It's my comedy.
Right, exactly.
Collective around it.
That's a great thing to have.
There are people who are like, no, we are a group. Like, this is a group. We do these shows. We make sketches together. We do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So New York has... The simple answer is New York has everything.
Right. Yeah. That's really cool to hear, like, about that perspective. Because, mm-hmm. you know, that's the one thing that I envy is I never got to do... I haven't gotten to do that yet. I haven't gotten to do, like, the mics of, like, going around to different ones in, like, a night. I did that when I went to Texas for, like, 2 years ago, which was great. And, like, the last day I was there, I did comedy outside from, like, you know, 3 in the afternoon to, like, 10 at night. Just going to 2 different restaurants and, like, going to a park to do comedy, and it was just, like, cool, and it was such a weird time, because Joe Rogan was supposed to take over this club that he ended up not taking over, so a lot of people were there to check it out, so I was literally, the last day I was there, that the first mic that we went to was, like, started at, like, I guess it was supposed to start at 2:30. It started at 3. We had to leave at 3:30. And we got there, like, early, so they made, like, a sign-up sheet. And then the people that ran it came, and they turned it into a bucket list. And it was like, oh, shit, now no one knows when we're going up. We have, like, 50 people on the lineup. Of people from different states and, like, different places of just visiting this club that Joe Rogan might take over.
Right.
So it was an interesting thing of doing that. And
I will say, if you do come to New York, like, obviously let me know, but, like, mm-hmm. you will discover in the mic scene that there are just objectively good mics and objectively bad mics.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Well attended, and there's even some audience and people focusing on mm-hmm. their good time. Other times, mics are very, like, productive and everyone's focused on getting new jokes out. It may not be, like, one you'd expect to, like, see
yeah.
random audience members, but mm-hmm. everyone's there to do work. And then there are mics that are like, no one wants to be here. It's terrible. You wasted your time by coming there. Why did you do this to yourself?
With how interconnected it is, are the ones that you do usually, like, very short, like, open mics time of, like, 2 minutes of, like, or 2 or 3 minutes of stage time?
No, it's typically 5 minutes.
Oh, really? Still?
I do those 5 minute mics, and I love mics that are an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
You get 9, 10 comics. Everyone does 4 or 5.
Right.
You get in, you get out. Everyone's there. They stay. You're attentive. You work your things out, and then you leave. It sounds like, you know, it sounds a little not personal, but that's kind of the point. It's like, we all know what we want to do here.
Right.
We want to work this stuff out. Why beat around the bush? Why make a whole thing before with a bucket and this thing? Just sign up, do it.
Right.
We have a great time after, but let's focus it on the mic itself.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And mics are such an interesting concept, too. You know, it's always, you know, the context is always such an interesting thing, you know. Especially, like, doing... The tough thing about doing comedy for me has always been sort of people around me and, like, my family and everything kind of having to learn, like, that I'm at this lower level. So it's kind of a tough thing to be, like, you can't make a big deal out of things. It's like, if you're coming to see me at an open mic, it's not going to be good. An open mic is not going to be... The analogy that I always make is, have you ever seen the movie Dodgeball before?
Yeah.
You know how, like, they have the coach come in, he's really weird, and then they ask him, like, is he weird? Is he a weird guy? And they're like, no. And then he acts all weird, and they're like, well, not weird for us. It's like, that's how mics are. You could bring a person, like, a family member or a friend, and they'd be like, this was terrible. And then you'd be like, no, this was fine. 2 weeks ago. That was awful. It's like, that's the way that I kind of feel about it. And it's like, that's just how you are. It's like, once you get into, like, and I'm very much, like, try not to be picky. I try not to be, like, super judgmental. I'm like, if a mic has at least a microphone stand and like a little bit of a stage area, it's like, that's all I need, is the bare minimum.
Exactly.
You can't get too picky with what you're doing. And the cool thing to me also is, and this is probably true in New York even more, is you get to see such a different variety of people. Like, that's a cool thing to me, is like, Angelo has a great joke about this on his new album, of how that is, of how y'all have people who, in any other circumstance, wouldn't fucking hang out with each other at all. They would not associate, and you would think, these people wouldn't get along in the slightest. But we're all at this open mic, and we all get along, and we all get along well. And it's like, that's how it is. It's like, that's a cool thing too, that I love.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, what other stuff have you been working on? Anything, you know, on the horizon or anything interesting? Or?
Yeah, I mean, coming up, most recently I've been doing, like, a little web series with my friend Hanan, trying to get more in touch with my Arab side and her...
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
...intuition on Jewish stuff. That went very well. We just put our last episode out, so we'll probably revisit that later on in the year, next year. But upcoming stuff, you know, running my show on a monthly basis, Respected Elders at St. Mark's Comedy Club, last Wednesday of every month. Run the Chicago show, a quarterly show, themed around the city of Chicago, which I fell in love with. For now, I think my focus is really going to be on New York City clubs and trying to get into more. Focusing on, my goal is by the end of the year, have a known weekly spot where every single like week I could rely on one night being filled,
right,
100% of the time, and that's really when I feel like I'm gonna hit the ground running and then really get into a lot of the set generation and regularity of it all. So that's my focus for the end of the year. Hopefully take that and do some traveling next year.
Right. Is your family still super supportive of everything, or are they still, like...
Yeah, my parents are supportive. They know everything. They all do comedy. They all stay there some weekends. They know I'm doing jokes and stuff like that. So they're very supportive. Mm-hmm. And, as you know, I do have a regular day job, though. Right. They're not worried for me in the slightest.
Right. You have a few siblings, right?
Yeah, I have a younger sister, and then two older half-sisters. So, yeah, I'm a big kid.
Are you still, like, I don't know if you were still, like, living with them or, like, near them. Are they still, like, near your area?
Yeah, they're still all, my parents are on the Jersey Shore. My siblings are all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
My sister moving to New York City again to start grad school. So we're basically between my immediate family. We're all in either New York City or Jersey, and I go back a lot, especially, you know, on the weekends during the summer. That's the one thing I'd like to do more is, you know, I do visit them often. I want to see more or less what's going on the shore during the winter, because I might stop by and see what things are going on.
I hope this isn't too personal, but, like, I know you talk a lot about the cultural stuff and everything. Are you a fairly religious person with the Judaism and everything?
Yes and no. Like, I observe some things, not all of them. Usually when I'm back at my parents' house, I'm fairly observant, but, you know, when I'm in New York City, I'm more loosey-goosey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can always be, you know, that's an interesting thing with Judaism. You can sort of dip in and out of what you can do, and the high holidays and everything is like...
I go by the phrase, if you have two Jews in a room, you have three opinions about something.
Oh, that's a good, thing. That's a good saying.
It's good way of words to live by, honestly.
Yeah, it's the one thing that, like, is, that's the one thing that's, like, so crazy to me about someone like Jay Marco is, like, someone who is both Jewish and Italian is crazy to me. Of, like, I can't imagine how, like, stressful conversations are and opinions.
It's fun stuff.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for doing this and being on again and everything, you know.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Richard. This was a fun time as always. Hopefully I'll catch you around soon.
I'll hopefully I'll see you
and do some comedy.
A little bit. Yeah. All right. If you have anything like ever that you, I'll usually check up on you, but if you ever have anything that you want me to promote, I usually do that on like my page for my podcast and stuff, so just keep me in the loop with stuff that you're doing, please.
I definitely will.
Yeah. All right. Great. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks, Richard. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye.